ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासं अतोदयमुदीरयत्। हस्तप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming, and I'm begging again for the blessings of all the senior devotees that I may speak something in the line of the acharyas. 11th canto, chapter 2, text 7. Ramam sata piprikchamo Dharman Bhagavatam Sava Yam Shrutva Shodaya Martyo Muchyate Sarvato Bayat Brahmam Sata Piprikchamo Dharman Bhagavatam Sava Yashrutva Shodaya Martyo Muchyate Sarvato Bhayat Brahmam Sata Piprikchamo Dharman Bhagavatam Stava Yanshrutva Shodaya Martyo Muchyate Sarvato Bhayat Brahman, O Brahmana, sata api, nevertheless, although I am completely satisfied, just by seeing you, priccha maha, I am inquiring about dharman, religious duties, bhagavatam, which are specifically meant for pleasing the Supreme Lord. Sava, from you. Yan, which. Shrutva, hearing. Shradhaya, with faith. Martya, one destined to die. Mucchate.
He is free.
Sarvataha.
From all.
Bhayat.
Fear.
Translation by the disciples of the Divine Grace, A.T. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj. O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. Please repeat. O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. Report. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Narada Muni might have been reluctant to instruct Vasudeva because of natural respect for Vasudeva's exalted position as the father of Krishna. Narada might have thought that since Vasudeva was already perfect in Krishna consciousness, there was no need to instruct him in the process of devotional service. Therefore, anticipating Narada's possible reluctance, Vasudeva specifically requested Narada to preach to him about devotional service to Krishna. This is the symptom of a pure devotee. A pure devotee of Krishna never considers himself exalted. To the contrary, he meekly feels that his devotional service is most imperfect, but that somehow or other Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, is accepting such imperfect service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stated in this regard, Dinarapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manavena kirtaniya sadahari. One can chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, feeling himself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. Shikshashtaka 3. The conditioned soul is souls in this material world become falsely proud of their so-called family lineage. This pride is false because one who has taken birth in the material world is in a fallen situation, even in the best of cases. Vasudeva, however, was certainly not fallen, since he had taken birth in the family of Krishna. Since he was Krishna's father, his position was most exalted. Yet, because he was a pure devotee, he did not become proud of his special relationship with Krishna. Instead, considering himself deficient in spiritual understanding, he took advantage of the appearance of Narada Muni, a great preacher of Krishna consciousness, by immediately inquiring from him about devotional service. This incomparable humility of a pure devotee of Krishna is far superior to the false humility of the impersonalist, who actually maintains a desire to be equal to God, though adopting the external behavior of a meek and saintly person. Bhayam, or fear, is caused by seeing something other than Krishna. Dvitiya binivesha shataha. Everything is actually an emanation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Vedanta Sutra, Janmadiyasya yataha. And as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Vasudeva Sarvamiti, etc. Krishna is the well-wishing friend of every living entity, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. If a living being gives up his misguided attempt to defy the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to the Lord, certainly he becomes confident in his eternal relationship with Krishna. A surrendered soul can actually experience that Krishna is his well-wishing friend. And since that friend is the supreme absolute controller of all existence, there is certainly no cause for fear. The son of a rich man certainly feels confident while touring the estate of his father. Similarly, an empowered representative of the government feels confident in the discharge of his duty. In the same way, a devotee of Krishna, acting as a representative of the Supreme Lord, feels confident because he can understand at every moment that the entire material and spiritual creation is strictly under the control of his benevolent master. The non-devotee, however, denies the supreme position of Krishna and therefore imagines that something is different from Krishna. For example, if a servant in the government thinks that there is some dangerous obstacle that cannot be controlled by the government's power, he becomes fearful. If a child feels that there is some power that cannot be subdued by his father, then he becomes fearful. Similarly, because we artificially think that there is something within existence that is not under the strict control of the benevolent Lord, we become fearful. Such a concept of a second thing, something other than Krishna, is called dvitiya vinivesha, and it immediately creates a foreign atmosphere of bhayam or fear. Krishna is called abhayankar, which means that he destroys all fear in the heart of his devotee. Sometimes so-called scholars, distraught after many years of impersonal speculation and enjoyment of materialistic life, become fearful and anxious. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati compares such disturbed philosophers to the bound vulture in the Chandogya Upanishad. Desiring liberation from fear, such speculators unfortunately concoct an imaginary liberation, vimukta manina, and try to take shelter of the impersonal spiritual existence or voidness. But the Bhagavatam 10.2.32 states, Aruhya krikchrena param padam tata patantyadho nadrita yushmad angrayaha. Because such speculators have not rectified their original mistake of rejecting their eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they fall from their concocted liberation and thus remain in a fearful condition. Vasudev, however, is openly eager to hear more and more about devotional service to Krishna, and therefore he states, Yan shrutva shradhaya martyo muchate savato bhayat. Simply by hearing about pure devotional service to Krishna, a conditioned soul can easily free himself from all types of fear. And this transcendental freedom is certainly eternal. Om jnana tumirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmaya shri guruve namaha. Shri Chaitanya manovishtam shtapitam yena vutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantitam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Ratha Kanta Namoshtate Sapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishwana Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatra Vyascha Kripa Sinidhya Vacha Patitanam Pavanetya Vaishnavetya Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasude Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna. In the purport, we hear the explanation. Well, actually, in the verse, we hear that Vasudev is inquiring from Narada Muni, and we can understand from the purport that Vasudev he's already a pure devotee. He has no need for any instruction, but because he's a pure devotee, he inquires. He never gets enough of hearing about Krishna. That's one of the symptoms of the pure devotee. And Narada Muni is also a pure devotee, and he's always ready to glorify the Supreme Lord. However, he's in the purport we hear that Vasudeva is thinking that perhaps Narada is feeling a little shy. He might not want to give him any instructions because Vasudeva is Krishna's father and he's senior to him. Narada Muni is also very humble. Vasudeva is very humble. But Vasudeva wants to hear about Krishna, so he inquires from him. So this humility that is exhibited amongst both of them is the type of humility that we are aspiring for. And there are many examples in our line of devotees who exhibit this humility. For example, there's Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who, although he was not only spiritually highly advanced, even from a material perspective, he was very Matthew's very important personality, but yet he never thought of himself that way. And if we read the translations to many of the songs that he's written, we hear that his extreme humility and how, and the way that he thought of himself. For example, this is from Amar Jivan. He says, "I'm always engaged in sinful activities. When others are suffering, I become very happy. Enthusiastic to perform impious activities, I always cheat others for my prestige. My mind is always attracted to something mischievous." So when we hear that, it doesn't sound like Bhakti Vinod Thakur. When I read it, it sounds more like, this is how I should think about myself. But for most people, the false ego is so strong that we're always thinking that we are better than someone else. And it's very difficult because of that false ego to think that actually I'm much lower than I think I am, or others are better than me. And Srila Prabhupada says that these pure devotees, when they speak like this, they actually mean it. It's not that they're pretending or they're trying to show off or trying to look humble. This is how they actually see themselves in spite of their qualification. Prahlad Maharaj also, he says that he's born in a family of atheists, and that he's naturally attracted to material enjoyment. But when Lord Nrsimhadev appeared after he finished killing the demons in Hiranyakashipu, he was in this fiery, angry mood, and everyone, even the demigods, even his own wife, his own consort, everyone was afraid to approach him. But Prahlad Maharaj was not afraid. He was fearless because he understood that this was his Supreme Lord, and he had no reason to be afraid of him. Today is the disappearance of Sanatan Goswami, I believe, yes? Yeah, as far as I know. So Sanatan Goswami, he's also a very nice example of humility. And this is a nice day to speak about his glories and to pray to him. He approached Lord Chaitanya with this mood that I don't know who I am. And this is the way that we should approach the spiritual master. He says, "Nich jati, nich sangi, patita adama, kuvishaya kupepadi goainu janama." I'm born in a low family. All of my associates are low. I've passed my whole life in the well of sinful materialism. So, and again, Sanatan Goswami also was a pure devotee. From his own perspective, he saw himself as very fallen. And he approached Lord Chaitanya in that mood. He said, I people think of me as so great and so wonderful, and I think of myself that way too. But actually, I don't know anything. He says, I don't know who I am. I don't know my purpose, so please instruct me. So this is why we study, we read about these great devotees, and we study the songs of the acharyas. For example, there's, from what I understand, Srila Prabhupada's favorite bhajan was Hari Hari Deepalu. And in that particular song, Narottam Das Thakur is lamenting. And he says, "I've spent my life uselessly not worshipping Radha and Krishna. I have knowingly drunk poison." So imagine he's thinking like this. Srila Prabhupada is thinking like this, even though we understand or have some understanding of how great he actually is. And Prabhupada says that we have to approach the spiritual master with a blank slate. We have to be a blank slate, meaning I cannot have any preconceived notions about. I have to know that I don't know anything, basically. I have to know that I don't know who I am. And I have to be open and willing to accept whatever I hear from the spiritual master. Otherwise, what can happen is that even for many years, even we can be practicing devotees, but if we don't have that mood, if we don't approach the spiritual master as a blank slate, then we can block out instructions and we can pick and choose, well, I accept this and I accept that, but I don't really think that's right. And because of the false ego, we block things. So Prabhupada says we have to be a blank slate. We have to know that I have no qualification, please instruct me. And then it's very important then to inquire and to hear from the spiritual master. So first and foremost, everyone has to hear from Srila Prabhupada because he is our founder Acharya. And I was thinking about what is the purpose. Of course, there's so many reasons why we have to hear from Srila Prabhupada, but I was thinking, what is it for me personally? What do I get? What do I hear? And what I get is that I hear the urgency. When I hear directly from Srila Prabhupada, I hear urgency. And I hear the understanding. I get the understanding that this material world is not a nice place. And I don't need to waste time here. And I'm fortunate to have a human body. I need to use that body in Krishna's service and make it my business to get out of here. So it's important to hear from Srila Prabhupada, and then it's also important to hear from others who are following in that same mood. But if we don't hear from Srila Prabhupada, then we won't have anything to compare it to, and we won't know. It could be easy to get misled. I need to imbibe that mood, that urgency within myself, so that not only for my own benefits, but so that I can also spread it to others, to help others. So how to do this? Well, one way is to follow strictly. Now, follow strictly. So Krishna consciousness is a science, and we can look at this in a very scientific way. If I don't follow strictly, then it's like having one foot in Maya's camp and one foot in Krishna's camp. And I'm thinking I can kind of enjoy both, but it doesn't work because Maya is a pure devotee. She understands. She knows what she's doing. She's empowered by Krishna. So I can't try to, you know, keep my feet in one foot in each camp. So we look at things from a scientific perspective. I start with the basics. So first thing is everyone, initiated devotees especially, commit to chanting 16 rounds a day. So then I need to look at that. And I might think, well, I chant my 16 rounds every day. I'm okay. But then look a little closely. How is my japa? Am I chanting nicely? Am I saying the Krishna's names very clearly? Am I in the mood that Krishna is sitting here with me and that he's listening to what I'm saying? When do I finish my japa? The best thing, of course, we know from Srila Prabhupada, is to chant during the Brahma Muhurta hours. So and of course sometimes there might be, you know, sometimes things happen and it becomes a little difficult, but it isn't impossible. And it shouldn't be that, all day long I'm trying to chant just 16 rounds. Because if anything that I'm trying to do all day long, then it's burdensome. Then how will I develop a taste if I'm putting it off, and I don't finish until late in the night all of the time, every day? Then that's not useful. And then how will I be inspired and motivated to want to chant more when I can barely finish my 16? Another thing is looking at the four regulative principles. So that's something everyone knows: no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. So, and it might seem like, yeah, I've been doing that for many years. Again, no problem. But if we look at each one individually and kind of go through very meticulously, then we can see maybe if there's any issue. It's good to check. We heard yesterday about self-introspection. So this is very important. I need to constantly be looking at myself to see where the flaws are, where are my issues, what's keeping me here in this material world. So if we take, for example, the meat eating, so that might seem like, who does that? No devotees practically, there aren't any devotees who eat meat. Okay, so then what about the next thing? What about eating foods not cooked by devotees? How often do I eat in restaurants? And if I really take a look at that, is that really the best thing? What do I know about, how do I know that are they using separate pots? I don't know. Are they using separate spoons? Do I know for sure that there isn't any? I know for a fact of some devotees who have said that they've had a problem where they ordered something that's supposed to be vegetarian, and by mistake it came, and it wasn't by mistake. Who knows? And okay, so they caught it, good. But is there a time where maybe I didn't catch it? It's a little scary. Do I even know what about? And then you might say, well, I only eat in restaurants where they serve vegetarian food. Okay, that's nice, but are these devotees? Is it being cooked by devotees? Can I really offer this to Krishna? Can I say, well, you know, Krishna, I'm going to offer this to you, but this person who cooked, they weren't thinking about you. They're not trying to develop a relationship with you. They're just working their job, and they're probably not getting paid a whole lot either. And so this is what I'm offering to Krishna. Maybe it's not so nice. But what do I know about that person? Did they even take a bath? Some people don't even do that these days. So then there's a lot of risk involved there. And it might seem like a small thing, but if I can't give it up, then I have to see this is an attachment. This is an attachment. So this is something that I need to look at. And it isn't impossible. Krishna helps us. Krishna wants us to come to him. So he helps us with our attachments. But first, I have to be aware of them. I have to see them and know that, okay, yeah, this is not really, I'm not really practicing strictly in this particular area. Of course, as far as eating in restaurants for preaching, we can do so many things. But that's a different story. But if it's just for my own personal sense gratification and I'm taking a risk, then that's like gambling. I'm taking a risk that maybe this thing that I'm eating, Krishna is not accepting. So then what is the effect on me? How does that affect my spiritual life? Srila Prabhupada, and what is it that we're missing out on, really, when we think about it? Prabhupada called this, they're working so hard to build a city of hallucinations. So that's what this is. So the things that I'm attached to, really, they're not even that nice, they're not even that important. It's just there's some emotional attachment there. But it's not difficult to get rid of. It just takes a little effort. We make the effort. We take one step towards Krishna, and he takes 10 or 100 steps towards us. There's a word, shrama. I was listening to a lecture by Vaisheshika Prabhu, and he was talking about this word, shrama, which means activities that are a waste of time, basically. And ashrama is not just the place, but being in that consciousness that I'm using my time in Krishna's service. I'm not wasting my time. And so I was thinking how, for the most part, most people are engaged in most of their activities are shrama. They don't really mean anything. They're just a waste of time. My daughters were telling me about this game that people are playing now with their smartphones, and they're trying to find these little monsters, but you have to actually go places to look for them, but it only shows up on your phone and you get points or whatever. And it's become like kind of a craze to where even in one state it's completely banned because they're walking around with their phones in their hands, not even looking where they're going. And so the police are concerned because they're trying to keep people from walking into the streets. I mean, people are just totally narcotizing themselves Because we're all looking for happiness. Everyone is looking for happiness, so we're trying to find it in so many different ways. And I don't bring it up to criticize at all. It's very unfortunate, but it's not a criticism. It's just to highlight the fact that people are suffering and they don't even know that they're suffering. Most people think that they're okay, not realizing that the time is ticking. And so we are trying to perfect ourselves and become strict followers of Srila Prabhupada so that we can help ourselves, but also even more importantly, so that we can help these other people who are suffering so much. We have to kind of see this world, again, Sukadeva Goswami called it a world of names. It's just a world of names. It's really nothing. And we have to really work to break our attachment to these things. Here's a quote from a purport. This is the seventh canto, seventh chapter, verse 33. The disciple follows strictly, and in this way learns how to control his senses. Then, Then by using his pure intelligence, he gradually becomes a lover of the personality of Godhead, as confirmed by Rupa Goswami. In this way, one's life becomes perfect, and his attachment for Krishna consciousness becomes positively manifested. So this is what we want. It's a very nice process. It's a very sweet process, and we want to fully take advantage of it. And just to finish, here's another quote from Srila Prabhupada. This is from the purport of chapter 13, this is text 8 to 12, where he gives the qualities of a Vaishnava. It says, as for detachment, one should try to understand the distress of accepting birth, death, old age, and disease. There are descriptions in various Vedic literatures of birth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the world of the unborn, the child stay in the womb of the mother, its suffering, etc., are all very graphically described. It should be thoroughly understood that birth is distressful. Because we forget how much distress we have suffered within the womb of the mother, we do not make any solution to the repetition of birth and death. Similarly, at the time of death, there are all kinds of sufferings, and they are also mentioned in the authoritative scriptures. These should be discussed. So this is important. It's not only for the non-devotees. This applies to devotees as well, because it's easy to get very comfortable and to kind of just be sort of stuck and feel like, oh, I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But we have to read regularly. We have to remind ourselves. We have to hear over and over again, not this body, I'm not this body, I'm not this body. Similarly, at the time of death, these should be discussed. And as far as disease and old age are concerned, everyone gets practical experience. No one wants to be diseased, and no one wants to become old. But there is no avoiding these. Unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, death, old age, and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. So we have to be pessimistic. We have to, if I'm in the mood that, well, it's not so bad here, and maybe I can make it nice, and I can do this, and I can do that, but then I'm just going to have to keep coming back and coming back. We have to be pessimistic, Prabhupada says, in many places. And if I was looking up following strictly on Vedabase, so anyone can look and see. He says it so many times, so many times. So if I really want to consider myself a follower of Srila Prabhupada, then that means following strictly. I'll read the verse. Once more, O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear.
You were describing the natural humility of an advanced devotee. But sometimes there's a phenomenon where devotees also have these same kind of thoughts, but it's more in the category of low self-esteem, and that it cripples them so that they really can't function. You know, like you see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada or Sanatana Goswami, man, they were like ferocious, you know, in their going in their service to Krishna. It didn't impede them at all that they were extremely humble, and didn't just their false ego just wasn't there, you know. So it does seem, it seems a little bit like, you know, this self-demeaning or low self-esteem type of psychology is just another way of that we get put ourselves in the center of the universe. Oh, woe is me kind of thing. But I'm wondering if you have any realizations of how, you know, yeah, Trinada peace and you change or a peace of Vishnu. But how do we keep it balanced so that we actually it accelerates our spiritual development rather than retards it? Because it can go either way, depending upon, there's quite a deep understanding, you know, of that verse. It's given by the Acharyas, oftentimes misunderstood. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I think one thing is understanding, first of all, I have to understand that I'm not on that level, and being real with oneself. I know what kind of thoughts I have when someone compliments me. And I'll say, oh, thank you, it's Guru's mercy. But I know that in the back of my mind is actually thought, yeah, I did do a pretty good job. So just, you know, being aware that that is there. So that means, I'm not on that level. And also, as you said, it can cripple one if they have that mood in the wrong way. So if I see that, you know, I'm thinking like that, but I'm then because of thinking that way, I'm not able to serve. Then that means this thinking, I'm not thinking properly. So I have to always be able to serve, because that's how I'm going to get rid of that problem with the false ego. So if I'm thinking in a way that's keeping me from that, then I'm not doing the right thing. And my spiritual master used to say, one should not think less of oneself, but one should think of oneself less. Don't think less of yourself, but think of yourself less. Because just as you said, it can be a thing where I'm putting myself in the center. Oh, I'm so fallen. I'm so this, and then it's all just me. But thinking of myself less, then I'm not thinking of myself. I'm thinking how to serve, so I can be in the proper mood.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the Nimittam Matram Baba Savya Sachin, you know, that Krishna's instructing Arjuna, just become my instrument. If we're so glorious, and we can do it all of us on our own, you know, we don't need Krishna. Mm-hmm. So that humility kind of puts us in a position where we can actually be an instrument. But the key is Utsaha Nishchayat Daryat. You know, just, no matter what, we keep going and serving the order of the Guru.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, nice class. I like what you said about Prabhupada said the clean slate, because that kind of takes care of any other preconceived notions, as you said, about humility or servitude. Some people think if you're humble or non-devotees might think humble or servitude, this is something I don't want. This is not good. Nobody wants to surrender. You know, they want to win. They don't want to surrender. But if you come with a clean slate and say, well, what, who am I? KME. Sanatana Goswami said, KME. They call me Pandit, and I believe it. That's what he said. But people walk around thinking they're their body and everything about their body, and it's important. But when you clean the slate, then you get a whole new idea, a whole new look of what humility can be, what servitor. If we're serving Radhe Shyam and Gaur Nitai and Krishna Balaram, this is the most glorious position anyone could ever be in. To aspire for that position is just amazing. So clean slate is important.
I was going to say about the false ego. Is there a good ego? Can we have a good ego? Right? So like, you know, it's really fun. Like the devotees are actually seriously humble. If you glorify them, it almost like burns their ear holes. You know, they're like, ah, don't do that. So, I mean, obviously I've never done that. I love it. Like you say, you do the, oh, you know, stop it. But inside you're going, oh yeah, aren't I wonderful? But it's really hard to get past that. But is there a way that we can take what we call the ego and use that? You know, so like if you're out distributing books, you're saying, well, you know, Divyanga did $40, I'm doing 45 because I'm, you know, I'm going to give it to him. Is that a good thing? Can we do that? Because I don't know, back in a long time ago when I used to distribute, that's what I used to always think. I never wanted to have anybody beat me on the thing because I was puffed up. But I was thinking, but I'm going to use that puffed upness to serve. So is there a way we can dovetail it? Obviously, it didn't work for me, but you know, is there a way we can do it?
That example that you gave was great. And I think the only thing I would add is just then to remember, you know, when we come back home, then, you know, we all see each other as kaboo, kaboo, kaboo. But yeah, out there, then why not? Great.
I was just want to tell a little story. You were talking about prasadam or offering and out there. So I just remember a story that happened way back in our earlier days. But this happened in a home. There was one Mataji, and you actually know her. She, at that time, she had several little children. So she had one, she had a business, and she had one maid servant who was a non-devotee. So every morning she would make sure that she cooks for her kids, make the offering, she, you know. She make, you know, your silent offering, you don't let anyone hear. So, and then she would go to work. So one day she was late, and she didn't get a cook for the kids. So when she went, she was worried about, you know, her kids not having anything to eat, and she is, you know, you're very strict, you make sure they only eat prasadam. So then she came back home, and when she came back home, she saw all the kids were eating. They had everything cooked and they were eating. So then she asked, well, who cooked for you? So then they said, you know, the maid servant, I don't know what her name was, she cooked. So then he asked the maid servant, why did you cook for them? He said, I do exactly what you were doing. You know, I saw that since I'm coming here, I'm trying to learn, you know, learn about the Hare Krishnas. And I saw that you would cook and you would go to the altar and you make an offering. You know, you do something there and then you feed the kids. So then she asked, well, what did you say when you make the offering? He said, oh, I said exactly what you said because I was listening to you. So he said, well, tell me what you said. He said, okay, I went there and make the offering. I said, tree fish head, tree fish head, tree fish head. So because she heard that this Mataji was saying, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, but mumbling. So she actually said, you know, like that. Hare Krishna. So anyway, her sincerity, I think, is what counts. So anyway, I just, you know, a thought came to mind about, you know, this whole conversation, and the purport talks about Vasudev inquiring from Narad Muni. You know, that Vasudev is a pure devotee. He has the Lord as his son, and he's inquiring from Narad Muni about devotional service. A thought came to mind, why not the other way around? That why not Narad Muni inquiring from Vasudev? That Vasudev is so qualified, so advanced, that he has the Lord as his child. So, is there any insights on that?
I don't know. I can only say maybe Vasudeva just spoke first. Maybe he was going to. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they're, you know, they're both great examples of you know, very humble devotees, and even Vasudeva had to request Narada Muni. Narada Muni didn't just come in and say, "Well, let me tell you this and this," because he's also very humble.
I just I was actually. This is actually a coincidence, because just last night I was kind of doing some research on the same topic here, and just want to share one of the results that came out. So I just want to know if anyone else has any other information. One result that came out of that research is that with all Vasudev had the Lord as his son, that in one sense he was less advanced because he asked for something. He asked for the Lord to come as his son. He performed thousands of years of austerities as Sutapa and is it Prishni? No. So anyway, he performed so much austerities to get, but he had something in mind. It's all spiritual, but he wants the Lord as his son. On the other hand, with Narad Muni, is he just serve these sages, serve these devotees without any motive. So that was like one conclusion. I don't know if anyone else understands anything different. It's still something that I would like to inquire more about, and I'm just asking if you know anything on that.
Nobody else is going to comment on that. I have just a quick, to your guidelines of like eating out and doing those kind of things. Obviously, first I'll tell what I was going to tell. When I first joined the movement, and from Philadelphia, when I first joined the movement, we didn't eat anything outside of the temple. Nothing. So I remember I was playing Santa Claus in downtown Philadelphia, and this is during Christmas, obviously. And I was seeing all these people walk by eating soft pretzels. And I love soft pretzels, or I used to, I thought. So I was like, God, I really want a soft pretzel, but if you eat this soft pretzel, you're gonna be a really bad person. So I actually, in my head, I genuinely thought, I'm gonna have to bloop, because I need a soft pretzel. Because the line was so strict that you could not eat anything outside of the temple. And I really considered leaving the movement to have a soft pretzel. So, I mean, it sounds really silly, but now we've kind of like loosened the collar, so to speak, that we let ourselves do certain things. Obviously, there's hard and fast rules, and then there's these rules where, So, is it better to stay hard and fast on everything, or should we be a little lenient with ourselves to get us keep going day to day?
I think that it's not really something that can be forced on anyone. You know, we all have to make our own personal choice and decision based on what we really feel is right for us. Every person is different. We're all individuals. So, but I think though still the standard is there, and you know, for me, I want to try my best to follow it. If it becomes a thing where, if I feel like I'm going to bloop or I'm going to go crazy, or well, that's a whole different thing. Then that means, I'm really attached, and I need to take it. I need to be a little bit more gradual about it. And that's fine. There's no problem with that. I think as long as I keep in mind that there is a standard, there is a goal that I'm trying to get to. And then Krishna is very kind. So, you know, whatever effort that he, and I see that sometimes there are things that, that I think that I'm attached to, and because things fall away just by performing pure devotional service. Some of these things just fall away. Because that's the power of devotional service if we're doing it properly. But sometimes, because I still think that I'm attached, then, you know, I still do it. But if I make a little bit of effort, then I realize, oh, Krishna's already taken this thing away. And then it's very nice.
Can I make a comment on this? Sorry, it's hard to keep my mouth closed here. You know, after hearing Prabhu's comment, I know in the past, there were 100 discussions that I've involved in with the same similar topic. Because in Guyana, we were the same thing, that when we become devotees, when I became devotee in Guyana back in 83, I never drank a soda until I came to Alachua. And never. And if anyone does that, then, you know, it's like. But anyway, so this topic comes up so many times. And in discussion, some things that came out is that, and this also involved, you know, some senior devotees, including sannyasis. And some of the advice that was given to us is that, while it's okay, this is the line, this is what we should do, this is what we shouldn't do, but between that is our tendency and our nature and our contamination that is also in the picture, which you cannot deny. So then we have to do the map per se. It's like, you know, look at the map and do your calculation and see which would hurt you more. To bloop from this beautiful movement just to take pretzels, or to take it, even if you're hiding and take it, but still stay and practice and pray that tendency eventually goes away. Yeah, I know we had one Muslim family friend. So in the month of Roja, which is probably somewhere around now, Ramadan, you know, they would fast all day. They would eat in like a hefty meal in the morning before the sun rises, then fast all day, also even from water. And then as soon as sun sets, they eat, another huge meal. And so anyway, that's the way of fasting. But they had one child that, he's a young boy, but he wasn't quite together. So he wants to drink water during the day. So one day he told me, I'm not supposed to do this, but at least I'll hide and do it. I'll go in the bathroom and I'll drink some water. And because the roof is over the bathroom, that even God won't see. So in other words, the idea is that, okay, you know, I have this tendency, but I don't want to give up my vows, but I'm going to do something that maybe gradually can take that away. So, you know, it's like we have to run our calculations. Okay, which is worse? Like, for example, keeping Nirjali Ekadasi on every Ekadasi, but then we eat extremely, you know, large quantity the day before, and then we eat it the day after, and then after that Nirjal, we don't do any service, and then 2 days after we can't do any service because of that. So which is better, you know, weighing our situations? So it's something like an individual thing that we have to apply intelligence. The process is called Bodhi Yoga. Yeah. And, you know, try to see where. I remember Srila Prabhupada used to point out to the devotees, when the devotees would go over to the donut shops, Srila Prabhupada would like very lovingly say, you see the sign? It says, do not. I also want to mention one more thing that you're talking about, the clean slate. There's one that passed him, Srila Prabhupada, I believe it was back in India, or some Indian gentleman was asking him, well, how come you get all these Western people to, you know, to just adopt this Krishna consciousness so nicely? He said, one secret of the success is that they simply follow what I say, you know. They never think to analyze, well, okay, this is wrong, that's right, you know, we shouldn't do this, we should only follow this. No, whatever I say, they simply follow. So, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai.
Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.